Welcome to the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show. This hour, we're talking trees. The ecosystems forests create hold incredible diversity of life, and yet globally, we're struggling to preserve and protect those environments. What do you think? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Have you been in an old-growth forest? What stood out to you? What worries you about deforestation? How are you trying to change it? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Stefan Schnitzer is our guest. He's the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences at Marquette University. The Schnitzer Lab focuses on how forests regenerate and maintain diversity. Stefan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Keeley. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. What is it about forests that we should think about if we don't quite understand why we should care so deeply about making sure they survive?
Well, forests are one of the most important ecosystems on the planet. I mean, they're about 30% of the global land area. They house the vast majority of the species on the planet, especially in the tropics, where they're incredibly diverse. And they're also responsible for pulling most of the CO2 out of the atmosphere. And they pull it out and they lock it up in wood, basically. They turn carbon dioxide in the air into wood.
And what is it then that pulled you into studying these forests? What captivated you?
Well, I've always been fascinated by tropical forests. I mean, they're incredible. The diversity is mind-blowing. I mean, you walk through a tropical forest and nearly every other tree you see is a different species. And they have a huge number of these woody vines called lianas that are draping across all of the trees and going into one canopy to the other. Those happen to be very diverse as well. And they're very complex ecosystems with the plants and animals interacting in ways that we're just beginning to understand.
Well, your recent research focuses on tropical old-growth forests and some newer forests in Panama. Let's talk about old-growth forests. Many people may not have seen or ever been near one before. Why is that?
Well, in North America, we've cut nearly all of the old-growth forests. It's very uncommon to find a patch of old-growth forest. The logging industry was very efficient, and many of these forests have been cut multiple times. The tropics were much harder to access. And so that's where we find the majority of the world's old growth forests at this point. Maybe some of the boreal areas that are very remote have old growth forests as well. But any area that's accessible by humans was cut 100, 200 years ago.
So what are the forests that we see here in Wisconsin?
Oh, these are all, I mean, they're beautiful, don't get me wrong. They're beautiful forests. They're nice functioning ecosystems, but they've all been cut. They're all secondary forests.
What do you mean by secondary forests?
Well, so an old growth forest is not disturbed by people. It has disturbance. Big trees die, little trees come up in that space. And it's really patchy in that sense. There's big tip-up mounds where the roots have pulled up the soil. But you have a mix of these really big old trees. Some of these trees can live 1,000 years or longer. There's been a debate in the literature about the actual length of the life of trees. But they're very, very old, and we can all agree on that. And then growing near those are much smaller trees that had an opportunity to reach the canopy because of the death of one of these big old trees. And so you have this mix of really large and small regenerating trees, and the species diversity tends to be higher in these old growth systems. Whereas in the secondary systems, everything gets cut. The wood gets used for houses and furniture, whatever. And most of the trees are more similar in size. It's more homogeneous. Often you'll have fewer species, but not always. And it depends where it is and how old the secondary forests are. Secondary forests can also be fairly large, right? If they're an old secondary forest and these trees have had hundreds of years or at least 100 years to grow, the forest, you know, when you walk through it, you'll say, well, this is a big old forest. But it's a little bit different than an old growth forest.
Stefan Schnitzer is the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences at Marquette University, and we're spending this hour talking about our forests. What questions do you have about forest ecosystems? 800-642-1234. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Tell us what value you see in having diverse forest lands or your idea to protect the forest. We've got an expert to answer your questions here on The Morning Show. You can also email us at ideas at WPR.org. The Amazon rainforest. It's in its dry season right now. That's when fires tend to happen. What can you tell us about what's happened so far this season?
Well, things aren't looking great for the Amazon. There's a lot of fires. There's a lot of burning and clearing. We've suffered a lot of loss of old growth forests in the tropics. The Amazon is the largest remaining single tract of tropical forest, but it's been divided up into smaller and smaller patches. I mean, some of these small patches can still be millions of hectares, and a hectare is about 2.5 acres. But yet, when you start getting roads put through these forests, then you get people coming in, and they kind of clear the forest from the inside. They've been burned. The burning is really happening because of clearing of the forest, mostly for agriculture, soy, and cattle grazing. And so we're losing this really valuable old growth forest for agricultural production for the most part.
So these fires, although we know that fire is part of the natural cycle and can really regenerate different areas, that's not what's happening to the Amazon. It's people.
Yes, it's people. People are the problem. I mean, many of these forests are quite dense, and they're quite wet. Even during the dry season, I mean, the forests are pretty dense. You're not really seeing a lot of natural forests unless you're in an area that tends to be very dry, or you have soils that don't hold the water very well. And so most of these forests probably wouldn't burn unless they're fragmented, unless they're intentionally cut and then burned.
Some scientists are worried the Amazon is approaching a tipping point where it would go from this lush forest you described to barren scrubland. What would happen if what's the fallout if that happens?
Oh, that would be disastrous. So basically the Amazon and areas this large, they maintain their own ecosystem essentially. You know, the prevailing winds are coming across the Amazon from the east. They're moving across these trees. The precipitation that comes down is being pulled from the ocean, so it's full of solutes. And these trees in the forest are moving so much water through their canopy that this water then goes up into the atmosphere and keeps getting pushed across the forest and becomes the rain that feeds the next trees. And that's why as you move progressively into the Amazon, and I've worked in Western Amazon, the insects are murderous because they want your salt, because there's no solutes coming down, except for when you're close to the coast, because then that water is full of salt. If you lose this, the whole ecosystem starts to change because the forest is no longer creating its own ecosystem. It mm-hmm. will dry out. We will start losing those trees, and we'll lose a lot of diversity that we have not even gotten a handle on. And we will also lose the carbon sequestering capacity of these forests to work.
Stefan Schnitzer studies how forests regenerate and maintain diversity. He's with us for this hour of The Morning Show, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know? I'm Keely Voltina. This is the Ideas Network. The good news is that the world is increasing its forest land. But the bad news is that we're losing diverse old-growth forests that absorb carbon at higher rates than the younger ones. We're taking stock of the world's forests with a forestry expert from Marquette University. Stefan Schnitzer is with us on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, And the lines are open here on the Ideas Network. What question do you have about trees? 800-642-1234. What steps have you taken to help preserve forests? What are you wondering about how to protect our forests? You can call 800-642-1234. Stefan, let's try to get our arms around the challenge here. I mean, how much forest land are we losing every year?
Oh, we're losing millions of hectares of forest every year. It's being burned. It's being logged. Tropical hardwoods are valuable, and there, you know, we can do this to some degree, but not to the degree that we're doing now. So the 90s, from 1990 to 2000, was a terrible decade for the forests, especially for tropical forests. That rate of deforestation decreased until recently. Now it's going back up until the last 5 years or so. The rate had halved, basically. Now it's gone back up, and so we're losing forest again at a very rapid rate. And that's a real problem. At the same time, we're gaining some secondary forest back because we have these marginal areas where people are farming, or after you clear tropical forests or temperate forests even, sometimes the soils aren't quite good enough to make a living on. So people abandon those areas and they are reverting back to forests. And this has happened in many places across the world where everything gets cut, but then some secondary forests grow back. And so we're both losing forest, mostly old growth forest and good secondary forest, and we're gaining back forest as well.
How do we weigh those different happenings, though? I mean, is it more good or more bad? How do we pit them against one another and figure out where we are?
Well, it depends on your perspective, I guess. But from the scientific perspective, it's bad news. I mean, we're losing the most valuable forests. The old growth forests have the most species. They're the most complex. They're the largest. Large trees tend to take up more carbon dioxide from the air. You know, these big tracts of forests are often considered to be the lungs of the planet, right? The CO2 is getting pulled in. Oxygen is getting liberated. The air is getting recycled. Tropical forests are also important, and temperate forests as well, but mostly tropical forests because of the diversity. They're incredibly important for things like disease and drug discovery, but also a lot of the big diseases that are affecting humankind are eventually coming out of these forests, and we're being exposed to them. And we're being exposed to them because we're moving into these forests a lot more than historically we did.
Hmm. Where are we gaining those secondary forests, those forests that are being grown now? Where are they cropping up, I guess?
Well, all over the place. You know, the northeastern U.S. Probably has more forest now than it did 100 years ago, because 100 years ago it was indiscriminately cut. You know, the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was just cut. People used the wood. It was a booming time in the U.S. Lots of buildings and houses were being built. And then a lot of that land was allowed to go fallow and forests regenerated. And the same thing is happening around the tropics. And it's patchy, though, right? It's variable. Some places are losing forest and they have a net loss. Other places are losing old growth forest or losing late secondary forest, and they're actually gaining more young secondary forest than what they're losing.
Do we just not realize how much devastation we cause when we cut down trees, because we recognize it as a renewable resource, even though it takes a really long time to grow back trees? I mean, what's our hesitance to making any change when it comes to cutting down our forests?
Well, that's a good question. And I imagine it's economics. I mean, people want to make money, right? So they cut the forest. If you can farm more land and make more money and you have the machines to do it, well, you take the land that you can. I mean, That's one part of it. So most of what we're losing, in, at least in the tropics, is for agricultural farming. It's hard to blame the poorer farmers who want to cut and burn a very small patch of forest, right, so that they can survive. Right? It's hard to blame people for wanting to survive and feed their families. But still, when you in the aggregate, all of those people cutting a hectare here, a hectare there, to farm it and then abandon it 10 years later, or 5 years later, also has a big effect. So I think the reason comes down to economics. I mean, you can still make money cutting down trees.
Stefan Schnitzer is a botanist and a professor at Marquette University, and we're talking about the state of our world's trees this hour of the morning show. And you can join in. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Ask your questions or help us understand how you're trying to fight deforestation. We've got Jeremy from Racine ready to join our conversation. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was hoping that maybe your guest could discuss things in regards to, I'm a hobbyist woodworker, so I always look for alternative forms of lumber to materials to use for my projects. And if you could touch bases on like FSC lumbers, composites for decking and things like that, or urban lumber is becoming a big thing, and reclaimed lumber from old barns and things like that. If you could just touch bases on how that could help with our local ecosystems and forests would be great.
Jeremy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Stefan, Jeremy's looking to keep building things but wants to do it the right way.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, the fact of the matter is we need lumber. Wood is a very important commodity, and most of the houses, most of the furniture, the things that we really value are based on lumber. And we can sustainably grow and harvest trees. And I think some companies are doing a very good job of that. You know, they maintain these enormous tracts of forest, which they have, they're cutting on certain cycles. And if you do it responsibly, you can farm wood, basically. You can grow forests, you can cut them, you can sell that wood. We're not going to, I don't think anyone is advocating that we stop cutting wood, but we have to do it in a managed and responsible way. And we can do it in a diverse way too. You know, we can grow a lot of species. So people like Jeremy can have his choice of the woods that he wants to work with rather than just pine or maple.
Right? And work with those responsibly then.
Exactly.
All right. We've got Janelle from Thiensville who also wants to join the conversation. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, Janelle. I kind of have two questions. I always wondered, we have a community where they just took down a whole forest along the river, and they just, we were, as people that walk here, we just love that little strip of land. And then also I have a question about, there's a lot of emerald ash borer trees that are dying and dead, and along some evergreen trees, we're losing them left and right, and nobody's talking about them and how to replace them, just that they're going to be cut down. But with us in this walking path, I'm wondering why, when builders come in and they tear down a whole forest, why they're not required to plant. Like if you cut down three trees, why you're not required to plant two trees? I don't care if it's somewhere else or what, but it just seems like they just disappear, these trees, and nothing's being replaced with these big builders. Thank you.
Janelle, thank you for that call. What about, Stefan, the idea of replacing trees that we take down?
I think that's a great idea. I think it should be. It's not only a great idea, it should be the law. I mean, if you take down three trees, you should plant six trees, right? I mean. These groves of trees that the caller is talking about, they're irreplaceable. They have their own personality. They host their own ecosystem full of birds and deer and lots of small mammals. I mean, these are wonderful places to enjoy. And when someone cuts it down, it just turns into a hot, dry, unpleasant little place that used to be, you know, one of your favorite places to walk. And so, you know, if they were planting trees in that area, yeah, okay, so it would take another 10 or 20 years before you get a little bit of shade in that area, but at least it would be something. And currently, I'm not sure why we don't legislate a better response to the caller's question. I think we should.
Yeah, you think that that would be a step in the right direction for our forests, for our trees?
Well, absolutely. You know, trees are critically important around the world. And this is the number one way that we can start to pull carbon out of the atmosphere, right? We have a huge problem with global warming, global climate change, and probably the most effective way to begin to reverse climate change is to start planting trees, because the tree is going to start pulling CO2 out of the air and liberating oxygen, and it's going to create a more healthy ecosystem and a more healthy planet.
Stefan Schnitzer is the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences at Marquette University. We're talking with him this hour about trees, our personal connections to them, what they offer our communities, what tropical rainforests do for our world. And you're part of this conversation by calling 800-642-1234. Let's talk about the value you see in having diverse forest lands. What are you doing to make sure that you're doing your part protecting our world's trees? Give us a call here on The Morning Show. Our conversation continues on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention. This is the last night of the gatherings. It's a mix of live and virtual events as delegates confirm Donald President as the party's candidate for president. That's tonight starting at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. From the time we're little, we learn that trees supply oxygen for the world. They make it possible for us to breathe fresh air, and yet somehow maybe we forget that or just assume that we see lots of trees, so we've got enough. But our forests are shrinking. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. We're answering your questions about how forests work and what's really happening to our trees. Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. What do you wonder about deforestation around our world or in our part of the United States? What do you want to know about how you can be part of a solution and not part of the problem? 800-642-1234. Stefan Schnitzer is a biologist who studies how forests regenerate and maintain diversity. And Stefan, Jim called but couldn't stay with us. Jim says there's a lot of clear cutting going on in northern Wisconsin. He says it looks like a bomb went off, just devastating the forests. And Jim wonders, what can we do about it? Big question.
Well, yeah, I don't know what we can do about it in terms of how to stop it other than change the laws. I mean, basically, clear cutting is fairly devastating, because what happens is you cut these areas and you fundamentally start changing how much soil moisture is available for regenerating trees. And so if you, rather than clear cutting, which is cheaper and easier because you can just bring machinery in, cut everything and pull the trees out, if you were to leave some trees that can provide some shade and some seeds for future trees, then the forest would regenerate much faster. And so I think rather than clear cut, it's much better to selectively log, to pull trees out, or to plant right away, although you're still not going to develop the amount of shade that you need to keep the soils intact.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for calling us and asking that question at 800-642-1234 while we take calls this hour talking about trees. Let's talk about your research in Panama. What are you looking at in old growth forests there?
Well, we're testing, basically, I would be classified primarily as an ecologist. And some of the big questions in ecology include what mechanisms maintain species diversity, or why are species distributed across the landscape in the way they are? Is it purely random? Is it all chance? Or are there specific mechanisms that dictate where you find different species and the diversity at which that community resides? And so we're testing theories to explain why we have the diversity that we have in tropical forests. And the diversity can be enormously high. You can have hundreds of species in a single hectare. And so we're testing these explanations for why this would be. And we're finding that there are very clear mechanisms that prevent certain species from becoming too dominant and displacing the other ones. Their populations start to become limited, and they are then prevented from outcompeting the other species in the area. And so it maintains this high diversity that we see in tropical forests.
Bring that home to Wisconsin, then. Why are these tropical forests important for people who live here so far away?
Well, that's a good question. And in fact, there's a lot of reasons why. The same mechanisms that maintain diversity in tropical forests will often maintain diversity in temperate forests. And we're finding that as well. And so there's been a number of similar studies in temperate forests that show that some of the same mechanisms are happening, but they're weaker. They're a little bit weaker, and that may explain why diversity is maintained at a much lower level in temperate areas than in tropical areas. And so the temperate forests, and the idea behind all of these studies that we're doing, is that we're testing general theories that explain forests across the world rather than just in a particular tropical forest. And tropical forests are also critically important for the people of Wisconsin and the world, because the tropics, even though it's 7% of the land area, it takes up something like 40% of the world's terrestrial carbon. And that carbon, of course, if it's locked up in tropical forests, is not in the atmosphere, causing increased temperatures, increased storm severity, and the other metrics of global climate change.
We've got Dave from Green Bay on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. I'd like to ask the guest about the Menominee Forest in Wisconsin, the Menominee Indian Forest. Whether it's old forest or if it's considered partly old forest, how is its quality, how is its care, and things like that. It's world famous as far as I know.
Dave, thanks for the question. And Stefan, I know that isn't your particular area of study. Where could Dave go to find more information about the Menominee Forest near him?
Dave, that's a great question. I'm sorry I can't answer that question. You know, I've spent the last 20 years living 5-6 months a year in the tropics, and I haven't actually studied the forests of Wisconsin very well, except for when in my first couple of years as an assistant professor. And so I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of information online. I would be curious to know whether it has been cut and when it has been cut. And I'm sure you can find, that information online. I just don't happen to know it.
Yeah. That reminds me though, that whether it is a specific forest we're looking at or even trying to assess the global state of our trees, it can be difficult to really understand what we're dealing with here. How do we measure the information about how many trees we have or how much forest we've lost?
Oh, yeah. Well, now people are doing it using satellites. I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it. But now with remote sensing technologies, I mean, people can very accurately measure how much forest is on the planet using sensors that are mounted on satellites and that have really good coverage around the planet.
So at that point, if you're looking side by side and it seems that we may have lost some forest, but we've gained back the same amount of surface area, we're still dealing with a quality of the forest, new growth versus old growth, all those other factors we've talked about.
That's right. And there's been huge debates about the value of secondary forests versus old growth forests. And as far as I can tell from reading the literature, you know, secondary forests actually do a lot. They're a lot better than no forest in an area that used to have forests, right? So where there's prairies, and Wisconsin's a very special state because Wisconsin has the tension zone where a lot of the eastern deciduous forests start melding into prairies that naturally burn, that naturally don't have forests, they're drier. And so those areas, of course, should be maintained as prairies and allowed to burn responsibly and carefully every couple of years, which is natural for that ecosystem. But in Wisconsin, the eastern and northeastern side historically was forest, as far as we know.
Stefan Schnitzer is a scientist and a professor at Marquette University, and we're talking about trees with this expert in forestry, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about forest ecosystems? How do you think we should be protecting our forests? What steps have you taken in your life to try to save our trees? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk a little bit more, Stefan, about that concept of the ecosystems in the forests you study. Can you give us some sense of how that works, how plants and insects and animals all depend on one another?
Oh, sure. I mean, these food webs are enormously complicated. And I would say that we're not even close to really understanding how this complexity is feeding back on itself. But we do know that the diversity of the plants is really high. Even within plants, within leaves, you can have endophytes, or these fungi that live within the leaves, and they're incredibly complicated, diverse. They're producing secondary compounds, or these compounds that may help the plant defend itself from herbivores. Then you have a lot of specialist insect herbivores that are eating these plants, and those insects are being eaten by larger animals, and it can be incredibly complex because we're not sure how specific things are. And so if you think about having this huge amount of diversity, it's really hard to study it in a way that's replicated to where you can say, oh, this association that I see a lot is actually a real association rather than a false spurious association that you happen to see because both of these organisms just happen to be abundant at that time. I'm not sure if that was a little bit abstract, but basically the complexity is really high. But what we think happens is as forests mature and get older and older, and these old growth forests are so valuable because those really complex associations develop over many, many decades and centuries. And so old growth forests are really important to maintain higher diversity and to sequester more carbon than the younger forests. But the younger forests are still important because the thought is as these forests start to age, they'll start to gain this complexity back again.
Stefan Schnitzer is an ecologist, the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences at Marquette University. He studies how forests regenerate and maintain their diversity. And there's still time for your call at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about forests in our world? What do you want to know about the fact that we are losing some of that forest land? And how do you think we can move forward and try to fix some of what we've done? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's easy to see when we've carved into a forest. Images from above reveal vast chunks of freshly bare land nipping into the edge of those trees. But regrowing our forests, that's a long, drawn-out process. We're talking about the state of our trees here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Stefan Schnitzer, who's an ecologist who studies forests. And we still have time for your call. We've got Ryan in Madison on the line. Good morning, Ryan.
Hi, I'm interested to hear any kind of cool fungi facts that you may know and how they play a role in biodiversity in the forest.
All right, thanks for the question, Ryan. Stefan, fungi in tropical forests.
Fungi in tropical forests may drive the diversity of tropical trees as far as we can tell. You know, you have these fungal pathogens that are everywhere, and they're very species specific, so they affect one species of tree. So certain fungi, certain species will affect one species of tree. And as that species of tree increases in its relative abundance, the number of stems, that fungi in the soil appears to be also increasing. And then when that tree starts putting out seeds and small seedlings grow, the fungi attack those seedlings, preventing that species from becoming too abundant. So what happens is the rare species have their own species-specific fungi, and they're not so common. So those rare species actually have bigger opportunities for regeneration. And so one of the core theories about what maintains diversity depends on fungal pathogens. So fungi are critically important in tropical forests and in temperate forests as well, because we think the same phenomenon is occurring.
Huh, fascinating. Ryan, thanks for giving us a call with that question. We've got Kim, who also wants to talk with us this morning. Hi, Kim in Madison.
Hi. So I'm originally from Michigan, which I know that the Lower Peninsula was clear cut back in the early 1800s, and I live by Grand Rapids. So that was Furniture City. My great-great-grandfather and great-grandfather had replanted their forest in the area so much so that they had started commercially selling maple syrup in the 1880s. How long does it take for one of those secondary forests to become at the level of one of the old growth forests?
Oh, Kim, great question. Thanks for calling in and asking it. Stefan.
Kim, that is a great question. That is a hard question to answer precisely. However, let me say this. So forests will regenerate, and they'll regenerate fairly rapidly if the soils are still fairly rich or fairly healthy. And so we can start planting trees today. And in 20 years, 30 years, you know, these trees will grow fast because they're in full light. If they have enough water, they'll start to turn into pretty big trees, and those big trees will be the nuclei for that next generation of forest. Whether they become old growth forests, well, that may take a much longer period, but I don't think we should worry about that. I think what we should do is we can solve this problem one tree at a time by planting trees and preferably planting trees or allowing the forest to regenerate on the edge of these other forest tracts so that forest can start to grow again. They'll support more wildlife, they'll produce more oxygen, and anywhere we can plant trees within reason, I think we should, and I think the planet will benefit from that. So every tree that we plant will start this process of reforestation of the planet. And Michigan in particular has beautiful old forests, and there are these nice big eastern deciduous forests. Within 80 years, you know, they had pretty big trees that they were tapping maple syrup from. So, you know, there's no reason to despair and say, oh, we've lost the old growth forest, we have nothing left. That's not true. Secondary forests are beautiful, and they support a lot of wildlife, and they can function like old growth forests. They may not have the complete complexity, but they start to approach old growth forests. So I think the solution here is just to plant trees and to stop cutting big forests.
Stefan Schnitzer is a scientist and a professor who studies forests, and we've taken the hour to talk about deforestation and what we can do and how we can better understand the ecosystems happening in large old growth forests. Angela from Oconomowoc wants to join the conversation. Hi, Angela.
Hi.
What's on your mind as we're talking about trees?
Sure. So I just had a question. It's a bit open-ended, but I wanted to know, you know, with urbanization and suburban sprawl, obviously the population in an urban area will change. But does that have an effect on the surrounding forests as well?
Angela, thanks for that question. So we're talking urbanization, people, building, places. What effect is that having on our forests, Stefan?
Well, it probably depends on the area, right? I mean, a lot of our what used to be forests here and in most of the Northeast and Midwest, these areas are now agriculture. And now a lot of places in Wisconsin, that agricultural land is turning into exurbs or suburbs, and so it's becoming development. I think that we can make this work in the sense that we say, look, people want forests. Forests are lovely places to hike in, to enjoy, and also they provide these services for people and wildlife. Well, if you're developing areas, preserve some of it for forests. Start planting trees, make sure these areas are lush and beautiful with shade, and then they're cooler and everyone enjoys them even more. So what I would say is, yes, people could actually be a positive force for change by demanding and preferring areas that are more forested than areas that are not.
Well, I'll also share that my grandpa was in hospice earlier this year before he died. And when he did, part of the program is that they make sure that they plant a tree in a national forest for every patient that's been part of their program. And there was something about that that just struck our family in a way that was unexpected, making just a tree off somewhere really personal to people. I mean, do we have to start thinking about trees as something that affects us on a personal level? Is that part of the answer?
That is a beautiful tribute to your grandfather. And I think it does affect all of us to have an intact and functioning ecosystem. And so that kind of program, I think, does affect us personally, both in our sentiment and literally.
You mentioned just a few minutes ago that we need to plant trees. When we think about our changing climate, I mean, our issues are big. Is it enough to plant a tree in the neighborhood, in the backyard? What do we do?
Well, I think that we can get out of this mess we're in the same way that we got into it, right? We stop deforestation. We start to reforest. We plant trees in areas where we can. That doesn't mean you have to turn your yard into a forest, but if everyone planted a tree, that would be a lot of trees. If we stopped our forest destruction and managed forests in a responsible way, as well as reducing our inputs of carbon dioxide and methane and other greenhouse gases into the environment, we could actually reverse climate change. And we could do it based on the power of trees to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere. And if we did that, in 40 or 50 years, CO2 levels would be shrinking in the atmosphere as they're growing into these trees. And so that's about the amount of time and the time scale that we should think about resolving climate change, 40 years, 100 years or so. If we start now, we could reverse this process, and we would do it based on the power of planting trees.
Stefan, thank you for your time this morning.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for inviting me to be on the show.
Stefan Schnitzer is the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences at Marquette University. The Schnitzer Lab studies how forests regenerate and maintain diversity. Coming up, we'll talk with one of the authors of The Grifters Club, which looks behind the scenes at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago Golf Club. And we'll hear from a Kenosha resident and human rights activist about the police shooting of Jacob Blake. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network.